Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That means losing weight without dieting. How amazing to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to join me here in the studio, the number is 818. Actually, if you'd like to join me, you will not be in the studio. I'm in the studio, but you can call in. The number here is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, and compulsive overeating is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you. And by the way, this is the topic of my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. Oh my goodness, I have a caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. Good morning. It's Nicole. How are you?
Good morning, Nicole. What's going
on? Okay, so I want to say this. So remember how you told me that on one of the shows that you eat toast and like butter for breakfast a lot of the mornings?
Yes.
The other morning I woke up and I was feeling like toast and cheese. So I put a slice of Ezekiel bread in the toaster and I sat and I ate it with, you know, some cheese, and it was so delicious and I enjoyed every bite and I did not feel guilty about it.
Oh my
and
gosh.
It was just,
wait. This deserves this. Yes. Because I know what that took for you, because for so long you've been in that good food, bad food, toast with cheese, bad, then bad you. And you let yourself get rid of that idea, have what you wanted. It was satisfying and it's all good. Then you can get on with your day, right? So awesome.
Yeah, it's still good, but I have to say, I still thought about the calories. I'm like, okay, this bread is 80 calories, and then the cheese is probably 100. So is that part bad or is that?
Yeah, that part's not good. Eventually, you're not going to think about the calories. What you're doing is it's in incremental steps. It's not like a switch is flipped and all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm going to have bread with cheese and not feel guilty at all and not go back to any of my old ways.
Yeah.
What you did was, you had bread with cheese, toast with cheese, but then, you're still counting calories and making sure you're safe. That will eventually also fall by the wayside. So it's not like black and white.
Baby steps.
Baby step your way into it. But that is a really significant thing. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, of course. Okay. So then I have more stuff going on. But hold on, just going back to the toast and the bread. But think about if I were to eat a bagel and cream cheese, okay? A bagel is
No, we're not talking about that. I don't want you to. I'm going to stop you because when you focus on that, you're focused on the wrong thing. Remember, you need calories. You need calories just to keep your body going, your heart beating, your blood circulating.
Right.
You need calories. When you start focusing on calories, then you start eating. You start exercising to earn the right to eat. And I want to break that mindset because that is where you get stuck. So I'm going to frustrate you a little bit, and we're not going to talk about the caloric.
Got it. Okay, now to my question. So I initially wanted to ask about when I'm sick. I don't know, I started asking and then we couldn't delve into it because I called towards the end of the show. But anyways, so when I'm sick, I feel like I end up consuming a lot more food for energy because I'm tired. And I feel like if I eat more, I'm getting more nutrition and that's going to heal my body. and I hate being sick because I can't work out and I can't take my Zumba classes, and it's hard to be active because obviously, like, I'm sick and I'm fatigued and I can't breathe because, you know, chest congestion. So I end up gaining weight when I'm sick, and it happens every time, and I just don't know.
Okay, here's what I'm hearing. Isn't it interesting that you said that when you're sick, eating will help you heal your body, give you the nutrients you need, and all of that? And so when you're sick, you give yourself permission to eat. And because you're only giving yourself permission to eat more when you're sick, you're going to eat more because you've given yourself permission. Versus when you're healthy, you're counting calories and feeling bad, and there's your mom going, I should be in the dirt because I ate, you know, ice cream.
Yeah.
So,
I have another funny story, but I'll tell you about that later. Next time I call in.
Okay.
That's exactly what you're hearing. Yeah. You're right.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, do you think it's anticipation of deprivation that when I'm sick, I'm like, well, when I'm healed, I'm not going to be eating, so I should just, like, eat this whole jar of honey right now?
Very good thinking. Very insightful, Nicole. Exactly. It's when you give yourself, you give yourself permission only when you're sick. So part of your mind is like, I'm sick, so now bring it. I'm going to eat all this stuff because I can only eat it when I'm sick, and I'm sick now, so I'm going to eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. But physically, I feel like I need more energy when I'm sick. Do you think I'm trying to justify it logically?
Yeah. When you're sick, what do you need? Do you need energy or do you need something else?
Sleep and rest, but I guess I was still trying to go to work every day, so then I was not doing what my body really needed.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So many of us, and it goes eat when we're tired or eat when we're thirsty or, you know, eat for the wrong reason. If you're tired, your body needs rest. Sometimes we can confuse thirst and hunger. But that's a whole other thing. But you weren't taking care of yourself. And I recognize sometimes you need to go to work when you're sick, but food is not going to be the answer to all your ills, if you will, when you're sick.
Can I ask one more question?
Of course.
Do you have time?
Yes, I do.
It's a two-part question. Okay, the first thing is something happened on Thursday when a really expensive handbag was stolen from me. I have a designer retail company, and somebody scammed me and stole the bag. And anyways, it's just been really stressful. It was really dramatic. And, you know, I feel kind of stressed about it because it's kind of like a bad situation now, you know. But it's a big loss for my client, and I'm kind of like dealing with all of it, and I feel stressed, and I feel like I'm aware of my emotional eating because of it, but there's nothing I can actually do to fix the situation right now. I kind of just need to wait and see like what the police find, what the detectives find, what, you know, and I just feel like stressed, and I'm aware of the emotional eating. Like when I'm doing it, I'm aware that I'm doing it, and then I just don't know how to help myself because I can't actually fix the problem right now.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm very sorry that that happened. That's horrible. Thanks. And it's such a violation.
Yeah,
it's such an awful feeling.
Yeah.
But what could be happening is you are transferring helplessness over this situation with someone who scammed you and stole a lot of money, a bag worth a lot of money. Helplessness over the situation onto helplessness over food. So that's one thing that might be going on. The other thing is, if you don't know how to comfort yourself, and this is just such a big thing, how to comfort yourself when you're upset, stressed, whatever, you're more likely to use food for comfort. So how you comfort yourself is you have to acknowledge the severity of the situation, acknowledge how it impacts you, validate it, right? Mm-hmm. That this is a horrible situation. You say, you can say to yourself, well, this is what I'm going to say to you. You could say this to yourself. Nicole, this is a horrible situation. I am so sorry this happened to you. But of course you feel violated and angry and helpless and, you know, just so scared maybe, and a range of different feelings. Of course you are feeling all of that. Mm-hmm. How could you not? This is big and awful and has implications other than just the situation, because sometimes when people steal from us or violate our trust in some way, it can also make the world seem dark, like a darker place. I don't know if that's the case for you, but I find often that is the case. And you have to say, this is really hard to see this part of people, and there's nothing I could have done to have prevented it. And that makes me feel really helpless and awful. And that's the acknowledgement and the validation. And then you reassure yourself, okay, but I'm doing everything I can. Okay. The detectives are doing everything they can. Let me see if I can, if there's anything to be learned from this for the future, maybe, maybe not.
Right.
But you just really have to, like, instead of trying to make yourself feel better by telling yourself, oh, it'll be okay, or, you know, you have to first say, it is not okay, before you then say, it'll be okay.
Yeah, got it. So just talk to myself with love and compassion and comfort myself. Yes. Nicole, it's all going to be okay. It is a tough, you know, so first it was really dramatic. It was scary, but it's going to work out, and you're okay, and you're safe, and it's all going to be fine. But I could hug myself.
Yes, but I think you need a little bit more. I think you've got the reassurance part down really well. But I think you need a little bit more of the
acknowledgement.
This sucks. This is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, but you, like, this is terrible. Like, that you need that before you go to, it's going to be okay.
Okay. Acknowledging that it is severe. Okay, got it.
Can I
ask one more thing?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so I have so much because I missed last week. Okay. So last night I brushed my teeth. I went to dinner. I went to Earth Cafe. I had like Earth salad with tuna. I even had like a little bite of bread because I wanted a little bit of bread. It was fine. And then I ended up getting a little bit of, I'm really stressed out about this. And I met with one of my attorney friends, and she was giving me advice about what happened. And so whatever, I went to Go Greek. I got a little bit of frozen yogurt, and then I came home, I brushed my teeth, and like I started working a little bit. So I've had dinner and I've had dessert. You know, I brushed my teeth, and I was like, I talked to this homeopathic doctor. She's like, whatever, doctor. And she told me it's good to fast for 12 hours. Do the intermittent fasting thing for 12 hours. Yeah, I know. That's already bad. Okay, yeah.
This intermittent fasting thing, which is a fad, which, okay, you know what? I know I'm going to get a lot of emails from people who say how great it is for them. That's fine for you. However, I have found that with people who struggle with food, intermittent fasting is a disaster.
Okay,
and,
bad idea. Okay.
And the science behind it is, according to the doctor friends I have, inconclusive at best.
Really? Okay. I brushed my teeth, and then I was like working, and I'm like, Nicole, do you feel physically hungry? I was trying to tap into like how I feel physically, and if I feel emptiness in my stomach, and if I actually want food. I was like trying to be very aware about how I feel and if it's like emotional or physical. And I didn't eat anything bad, but I ended up eating like a little bit, you know, maybe like at most 150 calories. I know I shouldn't be counting calories, but
Nicole,
I ended up eating something, you know.
You go to the physical, but what is the most important thing you said? You were working. You had this day. You're all revved up because of the situation. You come home, you have dinner, you have a bite of bread, you have frozen yogurt, you brush your teeth, and then you're trying to figure out why you might want to eat. From a physiological standpoint, I would say no. Your day influenced it, and you're working. So did you want to work?
Yeah.
What was going on as you were working? What was getting triggered? Look less at the food part and more at the situation. What's going on? What's going on right before you think, huh, I wonder what's in the kitchen?
Yeah, so what happened is I was trying to distract myself with what was going on mentally with the situation. So I started working to distract myself. And once I was done working, I guess the only other thing to distract me was the food.
Okay.
Before I went to sleep.
That's very insightful. So, you realize it's not about physical hunger. It's about trying to cope with something. You know, with food rather than address it directly. And when you're left just, with this bad feeling, you can't distract yourself. That's when you really need to talk to yourself. That's when you need to be that friend to yourself instead of using food to just, you know, as to cope as a distraction.
Yeah. But what if I was actually physically hungry? What if the frozen yogurt, because it was so sweet, like, spiked my insulin levels and like made me hungry? Because I think I felt physically hungry for food. If I felt physically hungry, it's okay to eat, right? Well, I think
yes,
it is.
Of course. If you're okay. Physically hungry, but make sure you're physically hungry because the expression, yeah. A feeling of yearning or wishing or wanting can sometimes be felt as a physical sensation. But you know, you didn't just have frozen yogurt. You also had a regular dinner. And that so it's not like you had nothing and then you had frozen yogurt and that spiked your, you know, spiked you up and gave you a sugar low. So go more for the emotional rather than the physiological. Be more interested in what's on your mind and that rather than in your brain.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I missed you last week, and a couple people said, hey, what happened to your regular caller, Nicole? Where is she?
Really?
Yes. People want to know.
I love talking to you, and your voice just, like, it just helps a lot. So I will call again next week.
I look forward to it. So stay curious. Okay. Stay curious about what's going on inside your mind, and less with what's happening with your stomach.
Okay. Thank you, Dr.
Okay.
Nina.
Talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.
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 Bye. Well, that is a great way to start off the show because it's such a perfect demonstration of how we use food to cope and can get so focused on what we're eating that we're not looking at what's eating at us. It's easier to feel helpless over food than it is to feel helpless over a situation in which, well, in Nicole's case, someone stole from her. That is the ultimate helpless feeling. Oh, I mean, one of many ultimate hopeless, helpless feelings, but you can see how it's a displacement, right? I have no control over food rather than I have no control about the fact that I got scammed and lost money and someone took advantage of me and I couldn't see it coming. I mean, that's awful. That's such helplessness and powerlessness. Easier to feel it about food because then you at least have the hope of exerting power and feeling like you can help yourself. Okay. So last week I shared an article, but I left part of it out. One of the most important parts, when I was talking about it, I actually left off the end of it, which is the part I really wanted to share. So I wanted to get to that. And I also have some other things to share with you. Okay, so this was the end of an opinion piece in the New York Times Magazine about why the so-called wellness industry is, well, pretty sick. The writer is Jessica Knoll. K-N-O-L-L, and she writes about how the focus on the wellness industry, which I sometimes, not always, often, usually, think is a euphemism for the diet industry, the $60 billion diet industry that wants to keep us dieting always. Because if you give up dieting, then what happens to their $60 billion? Okay, so the umbrella of so-called wellness is keeping women in a state of self-objectification and self-hatred, basically, is the intention of the piece. And here's the part I left out last week. By the way, if you want to read the whole article, you can find it on my Facebook page, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, or in my private community group, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community. If you're not a part of it, ask to join. I'll let you in, or someone will. And Jessica Knoll writes, she writes, the diet industry is a virus, and viruses are smart. It has survived all these decades by adapting, but it is as dangerous as ever. In 2019, dieting presents itself as wellness and clean eating, duping modern feminists to participate under the guise of health. Wellness influencers attract sponsorships and hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram by tying before and after selfies to inspiring narratives. Go from sluggish to vibrant, insecure to confident, foggy brain to clear-eyed. But when you have to deprive, punish, and isolate yourself to look quote-unquote good, it's impossible to feel good. She says she was at her sickest and loneliest. She was at her sickest and loneliest when she appeared her healthiest. If these wellness influencers really cared about health, they might tell you that yo-yo dieting in women may increase their risk for heart disease, according to a recent study presented to the American Heart Association. They might also promote behaviors that increase community and connection, like going out to a meal with a friend or joining a book club, or joining Dr. Nina's Food for Thought online community on Facebook. These activities are sustainable and have been scientifically linked to improved health, yet are often at odds with the solitary, draining work of trying to micromanage every bite of food that goes into your mouth. The wellness industry is the diet industry, and the diet industry is a function of the patriarchal beauty standard under which women either punish themselves to become smaller or are punished for failing to comply. And the stress of this hurts our health, too. She says, I am a thin white woman, and the shame and derision I have experienced for failing to be even thinner is nothing compared with what women in less compliant bodies bear. Wellness is a largely white privileged enterprise catering to largely white privileged, already thin and able-bodied women promoting exercise, promoting exercise that only they have the time to do, and Tuscan kale only they have the resources to buy. This is, again, Jessica Knoll speaking. I don't completely agree with that, but to an extent I do. She says, finally, wellness also contributes to the insulting cultural subtext that women cannot be trusted to make decisions when it comes to our own bodies, even when it comes to nourishing them. We must adhere to some sort of program, diet program, wellness program, or we will go off the rails. We cannot push to eradicate the harassment, abuse, and oppression of women while continuing to serve a system that demands we hurt ourselves to be more attractive and less threatening to men. And yet that is exactly what we are doing when we sit around the lunch table and call our stomachs horror shows. This is something called the, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, Bechdel, B-E-C-H-D-E-L, the Bechdel test for film. Developed by Alison Bechdel in 1985, an American cartoonist, the idea is that the film must satisfy three requirements. This is the Bechdel test for film. Must satisfy three requirements. One, it must feature at least two women who, two, talk to each other about, three, something other than a man. Sounds simple, but a shocking number of films have failed to pass. In 2019, Jessica Knoll wants to propose a new kind of test, and I am with her. Women, can two or more of us get together without mentioning our bodies and diets? It would be a small act of resistance and a kindness to ourselves. When men sit down to a business lunch, they don't waste it pointing out every flaw on their bodies. They discuss ideas, strategies, their plans to take up more space than they already do. Metaphorically, not symbolically. Let's lunch like that. Who's eating with me? She asks. I am. Jessica, I'm with you. Who's with us? who's ready to sit down with another woman, talk to each other about something other than a guy or about your weight. So one of the women who responded to this this piece was a writer named Anna Svoboda. And she wrote an article called "I Stopped Talking About My Body for 30 Days and My Body Freaked Out." And I talked a lot about this article last week, too. But basically, and you can go back to last week and listen to it, or you can look it up. She found that she said she gave it a try and stopped talking about her body for 30 days. But she found that checking your thoughts is another story entirely. She says, even though I wasn't talking about my body, I was thinking about it constantly. I kept daily logs about the food I ate and the conversations I heard. I even had a nightmare in which I was publicly weighed on a giant scale, showing in glowing red numbers that I was 15 pounds heavier than I had ever been. Even though I've had my body image issues, she says, I've never dreamt about my weight before. It's like I was obsessing about not obsessing. She also learned that it's not just about what you say, it's about how you feel. She said, I wasn't feeling great. This silenced topic of her body was like an awkward weight-conscious elephant in the room. By trying to find balance, I was teetering out of control. I was working out every morning. I was trying not to overthink my diet, but unconsciously taking stock. I skipped breakfast. For lunch, I'd eat a salad and a vegan chocolate peanut butter cup chased by a double espresso. Post-work, I would entertain visitors over 10 o'clock pub grub. And then when the clock struck 5 a.m., I'd jump out of bed to punish myself with another workout. Of course, a regular workout routine is a good thing for a lot of people, but I was feigning casualness while pushing my body to do the highest incline and the fastest MPH at Barry's boot camp, and I wasn't enjoying it. Somehow, this experiment started messing with my head and my health. Speaking up about your health is a different thing from speaking about your body. So she had a heat rash. What she thought was a heat rash turned out to be shingles at age 33. Tied to her immune system, tied to stress. Her immune system had crashed. Her doctor told her she couldn't work out, and this was her sole form of stress relief. And she was just at a loss. She said, you know, she was trying to find new friends by scheduling workout dates. Exercise and wine were the only things I knew how to bond with other women. And now she could have neither. Her doctor said she had to eat healthy foods, get sleep, and take off work for the rest of the week. And she said, once I dried my tears, I felt a sort of relief wash over me. For the first time in my life, I was talking about my body in a meaningful way, not as a physical extension of my self-worth, but as a vital machine that makes me walk upright, breathe, speak, and think. And my body was talking back, telling me to slow down. So I decided to reframe the conversation. And so she didn't stop talking about her body and her health, but when her body, when people turned to diets or dissatisfaction, she would bring up Jessica Knoll's article. By zeroing in on and yanking out the pervasive weeds that have overtaken the wellness narrative, I found we could make room for new conversations to grow. So in the spirit of these new conversations, she's piggybacking Jessica Knoll's challenge with a challenge of her own. Instead of commenting on your friend's physical features, let's go deeper. Thank your friend for letting you crash for a week when you thought you had bed bugs. Just her, she says. Ooh. Sounds awful. Tell your funny coworker that her twisted sense of humor got you through 2013, or let your boss know that her business acumen inspired you to get your MFA. She said she'd like to pull up a seat at that table and fearlessly dive into whatever topic we're discussing and the vat of olive oil we're dunking our breadsticks in. So, my wonderful listeners and viewers, I challenge you to do the same thing. Stop talking about your body for 30 days. Stop talking about other people's bodies and start discovering what might be on your mind. Because if you're not thinking about what you're eating and you're not thinking about what you weigh, imagine the amazing things that could be on your mind. So often we focus on food, weight, or body image as a distraction from other things, including ourselves. It's easier to do that. It's easier to count carbs than it is to feel things you don't want to feel or think things you don't want to think. It's easier to focus on what you're eating than it is to dig deeper into what's eating at you. But that is exactly what we must do in order to change. That is necessary for change. And I don't mean a little bit of change. I mean a lot of change. I mean liberation. I mean never doing it again, never waking up and thinking about your day in terms of what you get to eat or not eat. I'm talking about waking up and thinking about your day as to how you're going to feel, what you're going to do, who you're going to see, living your life, not existing one carb at a time. Okay. So, to that end, let's go to, negative thinking, quote unquote, negative thinking. I often hear people say, oh, I'm being negative, or oh, so-and-so was being negative, when really they're just talking about something that's painful. And we got to change the label. So to stop negative thinking, you got to question the label. Negative means to be pessimistic, gloomy, or cynical. That is a general attitude and perspective on life. But so before you accuse yourself of being negative, ask yourself whether your self-described negativity is an attitude or a description of an emotional reaction. So name the true emotions. Don't associate character defects to emotions. If you're angry, that doesn't make you an angry person or a negative person. If you're upset, that doesn't make you a negative person. It makes you a person who's upset. And often we then turn the negative feelings we don't want to express, we turn them on ourselves anyway. We don't want to be negative and talk about how your coworker is driving you crazy or your husband is driving you crazy or your wife is driving you crazy or your kids are driving you crazy. Oh, no, that's being negative. That's not nice. You don't want to do that. So you explain their behavior away. Oh, I understand why. And I totally get it. Like you make excuses for and tell yourself why you shouldn't feel something. And then you get mad at yourself for eating about it. So all the quote unquote negativity comes out anyway. It just comes out, boom, onto yourself. And then you feel bad. And then when you feel bad, you use ice cream or something to feel better. And then the cycle just continues. So we want to stop the cycle. So if you feel something negative, get more interested in it. Get more curious, not critical. So maybe you're feeling not negative. Maybe you're feeling anxious, scared, upset, angry, helpless. Experiencing painful feelings is difficult, but it doesn't mean you're negative or that the feelings are negative. Feelings are just a reaction to the situation. And the next thing you have to do if you want to deal with negative feelings is process. Process, process, process them. You can't stuff down emotions. You can't starve them away, let them go, drop them, ignore them, or get rid of them with positive thinking. As counterintuitive as it may sound, the only way to get rid of feelings is to actually feel them. So when you're upset, express it. Express it. Maybe you have to cry or yell or journal, but journal about your feelings. Talk to someone who understands, process what's going on, have an emotional experience. And by the way, often people mistake thinking about their feelings as processing them. So thinking about your feelings sounds like this. Oh, I was really upset by XYZ, and I recognize and I realize that I was very upset. Very, very upset. Does that feel upset? Are you feeling the upset? No, of course you're not. Because that's not processing your feelings. That's identifying your feelings. And that's thinking your feelings. Expressing your feelings is, oh, I was so upset. It really upset me. It really hurt my feelings. Ugh. Gosh, I can't believe this is happening, right? That's expressing it. And when I talk about expressing it, by the way, I don't mean necessarily that you go and you talk to the person who's making you upset, because sometimes that's a good thing if you do it in a communicative, healthy way, and sometimes it is a very bad thing. But either way, you've got to allow yourself to express what you're feeling. Another thing that you have to do to avoid having negative feelings, in other words, you've got to change the label, you got to process them, do not compare yourself to others. Often people say, well, this happened to me, but a really worst thing happened to my friend, so who am I to be so negative about my own experience? Well, you know, it's one thing to have perspective and to say, oh, wow, I really recognize that, you know, I just broke my arm, but my friend broke two of her legs, and wow, she's got it worse than I do. But hey, my broken arm still affects me, right? You don't want to say, well, who am I to be upset about my broken arm when my friend has two broken legs? That's where it goes when you compare yourself. So you get to be upset that you broke your arm, all of which is a metaphor, of course. You get to be upset that you broke your arm, and you get to be grateful that it's just one arm and not both, and not both your legs. So how do you stop negative thinking? You stop thinking about your thoughts, emotions, reactions, and wishes as negative. Your feelings and thoughts need your attention, not your condemnation. So next, I've got a few things to talk about with you guys, but here's one. Here's a good one. And by the way, we still have about 10 more minutes. If anyone wants to call in, the number is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Okay. How to stop feeling hungry. Do you often feel hungry no matter how much you eat? Ever wonder why? Well, a few years ago, my then 8-year-old daughter complained that her stomach was hurting a lot. And I ruled out the common culprits, food poisoning, the flu, allergies, whatever. And it turned out that she was really nervous about going back to school after the holiday break. So her nervousness was coming out in a tummy ache. So, by the way, how did I know it was that? Because as soon as we started talking about how nervous she was, her tummy ache went away. So that is an example of the emotional to physical sort of mind-body connection that can happen. Another one that we don't often think about, another mind-body connection, is hunger. There really is a mind-body connection when it comes to hunger. So your relationship to food can be an expression of what is missing in your life. Many of our expressions utilize food metaphors to describe a feeling of yearning. So think about the expressions, right? Hungry for love, starving for attention, even having an appetite for life, right? The same words are used, yearning for people, for life, for food. So wanting or needing more of something or someone may be experienced as actual physiological hunger. And that is such an important concept. I have to say it twice, as I always do when it comes to this. Being hungry for more of something like love, attention, friendship, understanding, money, security, that can be experienced as actual physical hunger. So ask yourself, what are you hungry for in your life that isn't food? Loneliness can feel like emptiness. Food symbolically fills the void. If you feel sad and in need of comfort, but nobody is there to console you, you may use food to provide a feeling of comfort because food is there when people are not. And if you're in an unsatisfying relationship, you might turn to food to satisfy your unmet needs. If you're in a situation you can't control, you may focus on your powerlessness over food instead of feeling powerless about the situation. And that may be a slight bit of what was happening with Nicole, right? Feeling powerless over food rather than feeling powerless over the situation of essentially being robbed. Ask yourself also, what do you want more of in your life? More friends? More loving, nurturing, comforting people in your life? Do you need more power over various aspects of your life? If so, what are they? Do you need more money? Do you need more happiness? More time? By getting in touch with what you need more of in your life, you are likely to stop using food as an unconscious means of expressing a wish for more, or conflicts over emotional hunger. So ask yourself, here's some food for thought. Hold on. Thirsty? Okay. So here are some things to do. Ask yourself, what do you want more of? What do you want more of? And by the way, let yourself be true to yourself. I once heard this great story about Oprah. I don't know if it's true. I choose to think it's true because it sounds like Oprah. But apparently, she was in some beauty pageant or some kind of pageant when she was younger, before she became Oprah. And the question for the contestants was, if you got $1 million, if you were given $1 million, what would you do with it? And so all the other contestants said, well, I would give it to starving children in Africa. Well, I would open a charity and I would do this humanitarian this or that. And they went on and on and on. You know, every single one of them was like, I would take that $1 million and I would use it for good. They got to Oprah. They asked her, what would you do with the $1 million? And she said, girl, I'd go shopping. I love it because it was so true and real. She wasn't afraid to say, like, yeah, I'd go shopping. I want some stuff, right? We kind of are socialized to be like, oh, don't want too much. Don't want too much, especially women. Don't want, don't yearn, don't desire, don't want. And what happens? We say no to our true yearnings and wishes and yes to food. We let ourselves have more of that. So allow yourself to think, what do you want more of in life? What are the voids in your life? What's missing? What needs to change? And what is one step you can do today to fill the emptiness that is the cause of this hunger? When you translate your body language into wishes, emotions, and or needs, you don't express or resolve those feelings or conflicts with food. So your body is listening to you. If you're hungry all the time, what are you hungry for? And what is one step you can do about that today? You want more friendships? What can you do? You want to connect with more people? What can you do? You can join the Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community and so much more. So, you know, let me know. Join the community or email me or message me on Facebook or Instagram. Let me know. Let me know what you do. Let's share your triumphs. Share the things that you're doing that you feel really good about. So we only have a few more minutes. I'm going to talk about this. How to get over a mistake. So I just found a mistake. So my book, here it is, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. By the way, if you would like to get your copy for free, just head on over to drnina.info. DrNina.info, DRNINA.info, and you can get your free copy. All you have to do is cover shipping. So I'm doing the audio version of the book, which is, I have so hard. I have a new appreciation for voiceover artists. Oh my gosh. I'm reading and reading, and I found a typo. I found a typo, and I was mortified, especially since this book has gone through 3 versions of proofreading. But, you know, even everybody makes mistakes, right? So here's how to get over a mistake. And by the way, years ago, I launched something online, and the welcome page that came up was missing an L. So it said we come instead of welcome. And thousands of people had seen it. And that means thousands of people saw the error, which I didn't know until one of those thousands of people messaged me on Facebook. And she said, you know, it says we come instead of welcome. And I was just like, oh, cringe, total mortification. And this is what went through my mind. It's like, oh, how could I have missed this? What are people going to think? What's wrong with me that I could overlook such a significant typo? How did I not see it? oh my God, I went to the worst place scenario. I imagine people would be completely put off. Like now when I look back at it, I think, wow, okay, it's just a missing L. But at the time I was like, oh my God, they're going to think less of me. They're going to say she has a doctorate and yet she can't spell. All kinds of things went through my mind. And I confided my concerns to a friend of mine, and she started to laugh. And she said, wow, I am so relieved you made that mistake. You actually are human. What a relief. And she went on to tell me that this error, although, you know, understandably upsetting, made me seem more accessible and fallible in her eyes. And from her perspective, that was a good thing, which I had never, ever, ever thought of. And she reminded me that all those thousands of people did not see the we come instead of the welcome and unsubscribe. They are still subscribed. You may be one of them. So it's easy to lose perspective and feel as if a relatively minor mistake is huge. And in my case, I realized I highlighted the typo and minimized the overall value I strive to bring to my subscribers and my readers and listeners. And so I really realized that worrying about a mistake just makes things worse. So here's what to do when you make a mistake. You stop obsessing about what happens. You realize that focusing on the mistake just leads to negative self-talk and an expectation of perfectionism, which both affect your self-esteem. If you are expecting yourself to be perfect, guess what? You're going to fail because we are all perfectly imperfect. And that's okay. That's good. That makes us interesting. And when you feel bad about yourself, oh, I'm so not perfect. I made a mistake. I suck. Guess what? Food is an escape. It's a comfort or it's a punishment. And you start learning from the mistake. You start figuring out what can you do to prevent another error. Double proofreaders for me. Didn't quite work for my book, but so far I'm halfway through, only one mistake, so I'm pretty happy with that. Yay for my proofreader. So I often reassure people, other people, I reassure you that it is okay to mess up, to screw up, to forget, to just plain fail. It's okay. It's part of the process. And so this experience forced me to put my beliefs in action. Trust me, this was not my first mistake, but it was the first time I started thinking differently about it. And so look at what you feel when you've made an error. You know, do you feel shame? Do you feel guilt? Think about what it means to you, what it means to have made a mistake. Does it mean that that there's something wrong with you, that other people are going to see some deficit? What does it mean? And then challenge that meaning. And remember, mistakes are not proof that there's something wrong with you. No, mistakes are just proof that you're human and you're still trying. And that's a beautiful thing. So thank you again. I think we started a little late, so we are ending a little late. Thank you for joining me here today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. You can listen live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio, or you can listen later anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all podcast services. And I also want to share that link again for the free copy of my book. There are limited copies of the free copy, so grab yours when you get it while you can. And that is drnina.info, drnina.info. I'm really, really proud of this book, even the typo. And I know it gives a lot of value, and it's really going to expand on what I talk about here on the show. So thanks so much. Have a great week, and I will see you here next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin only on LA Talk Radio.